session today, I'd like to introduce, we're going to be calling it Module 1B. Last Thursday, you had the opportunity to sit down with Sharon Smith and learn a whole lot of information about benefits here at McGill. And we would like to think of this presentation today as being an extension of what you heard last Thursday. So we're going to be repeating some of the slides that you saw, as well as introducing some actual new concepts, and maybe hopefully do some fun exercises that you've never thought would be fun. We'll get started. We're going to be looking at all of the other plans at McGill, mainly the McGill pension plans that exist, as well as something new that's going to be coming up. I'd like to get things started and asking you guys, what do you think is a hybrid arrangement? You think it's any one of these answers here?
See?
Well, for those of you that don't know, the actual answer is number E. It is a type of pension plan. Although there are hybrid cars, there are hybrid roses, and so on. So every time you get a right answer, I'd say treat yourself to one of the chocolates. You've already eaten that? What are we going to be doing here today? A lot of the concepts that we're going to be talking about are going to be related to pensions. We're going to try and keep this at a very basic level, give you some information. For those of you that have been working and are very familiar with pensions, it'll be a good refresher. For those of you that are less familiar, hopefully by the end of this presentation, you can say that you've got a certain amount of comfort and understanding about what pension plans are all about. We'll be looking at how do the various programs interconnect with each other here at McGill. What are they? Why are there different types of pension plans? And we're going to be linking this to something that you did last week when you were looking at the different employee groups here at McGill. And we'll try and give you some pointers to say how does the employee group match up with the pension plan. We'll also give you an opportunity to ask questions that you might have had in the past. When we look at the different type of pension plans at McGill, we do have the Simplified Pension Plan, the Service Employees Union Pension Plan, and the McGill University Pension Plan. There's also a new program coming in, and I'll talk about that towards the end of the presentation. When we look at the employee groups, if you recall from last week, we looked at different groupings. We know we have the admin and support staff, large representation from the various titles that you see on the screen itself. A lot of them are part of MUNACA. We also have sessional employees. We have the trades and services groups. What we've added now this week that you didn't have last week, we added in a couple of these letters. Hopefully you guys know what those letters mean because I don't. We'll see now how we're going to be able to link in some of these groupings with some of the various pension plans later on. The academic staff, and we got tenure stream and so on and so forth. And the list just keeps on going. So what we can see from all of this, there's many, many different groupings here at McGill. So understanding how those groupings interconnect with the different pension plans is going to make it a lot easier when you're dealing with members down the road. And as the list just keeps on going, this is just a quick reminder for all of the material that you covered last week when you were looking at all of the different groups. Eventually, the intent is to have a grid where we can sort of lay all of this information out for you and identify each one of the various groups and then link it in to say what's different for this group versus any other group for all of the various programs that are going to be here at McGill. And as we go on, now we move right into pension plans. When we look at pension plans, before we start talking about the Simplified Pension Plan, the Service Employees Union, the McGill University Pension Plan, it's important that you get a basic understanding of what are pension plans in general. And we can really group them into two different buckets. The first one being defined benefit pension plans. And the best way that I use to try and remember what a defined benefit pension plan, I think back at the icon that I have here. And for those that may not be able to see it very clearly, it's someone working out formulas. So if you remember just this image here, a defined benefit pension is a formula. Get a better part of the way there. If you're interested to see, what formula are we talking about? And regardless of which pension plan that you're participating in, if it's a defined benefit plan type, the formula is going to be tied to how many years are you working for this employer and what your salary is going to be with that employer. So if you knew in advance how much you would be earning throughout your career and how long your career would be with that employer, with these type of pensions, you'd be able to determine in advance how much your pension is going to be worth at the end of your career. There's a second type of pension. Again, it's called a defined contribution. If you remember, piggy bank. In these type of pensions, we put money in. Our employer puts in monies. Over and above putting in money into the pension plan, we also have to make investment decisions. So very often today, the norm, more often than not, you as members of a pension plan have to decide how to invest those monies. So you make investment decisions. Based on the performance of those investments, the piggy bank is either going to grow to a huge amount or might not grow as much, depending on what the market conditions are. So the two factors that determine how big your piggy bank actually grows depends on how much money is put in and what the rate of return. So we can see already some differences. In the defined benefit pensions, we never talked about rate of return. It's not important. In a defined contribution plan, rate of return is extremely critical. So the more money that we accumulate in our piggy bank, the bigger the pension that we can afford at the point that we're ready to retire. So we can start seeing the big nuances and differences between the two pension plan types. And we're going to come back to these time and time again when we're going to start describing what are the different types of regimes that we actually have here at McGill. When we look at eligibility, regardless of what pension plan type, some of the concepts I'm going to be introducing now, you'd say apply right across the board. So once you understand the concepts, it'll be easier for you to then relate to, well, how do these concepts then apply in this plan versus the next? We look at, first thing here at McGill, we always look at employee groups. Different employee groups participate in different plans. So understanding which employee group the person that you're going to be dealing with, whether it be in terms of a form that comes in or a transaction or an actual caller on the phone, understanding who it is you're dealing with is going to be one of the most critical steps because it guides you as to what, which rules, which plan applies, and so on. So you need to have that part clear. When it comes to enrollment in a pension plan, we have the next distinction that comes in. We have full-time employees, and we have part-time employees. We use different labels to identify these groups. But when we're looking at full-time employees, you need to then look at which plan am I going to be dealing with. If you know which employee group, you'll know which plan. Typically, the start. When is the first opportunity that I have to join a pension plan? It'll either be the start date or the first of the month following your enrollment. So different plans will have different rules, but generally it's one of those two that are there. In the case of part-time employees now, eligibility, regardless of which pension plan we're looking at, it's one and the same rule. The legislation in Quebec applies to all pension plans. So when we look at eligibility rules for part-time employees, it's one and the same. We look at not what the employee is doing this year, we look at what the employee did last year. So if you have a part-time employee that gets hired for the very first time and they're working at McGill, we know that they're not going to be joining a pension plan because we make reference to what did they do last year. So if we know, and at McGill we have many, many instances where an individual used to be a full-time employee, they leave and they come back and they get rehired. Sometimes they get rehired in these part-time positions. So understanding what they did in the prior year is going to be important. In this instance, we look at the two rules that are there. The law says if in the prior calendar year you worked at least 700 hours, or if you earned 35% of the YMPE. Now, those letters, all it means is the year's maximum pensionable earnings. Some of you may be familiar, those of you that work on payroll, we know that we make contributions to the Quebec Pension Plan. But we don't contribute to the Quebec Pension Plan on our entire income. There's a maximum amount that's recognized under the Quebec Pension Plan. Well, that Quebec Pension Plan earnings limit is the very same thing as the year's maximum pensionable earnings. This year, for instance, that amount is $50,100. So if we have an individual who's earning $100,000 as an example, we would say that $50,100 of their income would be recognized for Quebec Pension Plan purposes, so they make contributions to the Quebec Pension Plan on those amounts. The other $50,100 is not pensionable under the Quebec Pension Plan. So you add in those two values. So 35% of $50,100 will give you a certain dollar amount. So if the person in the prior calendar year met either one of those two conditions, they're eligible to join. Regardless of which pension plan we're looking at, that rule is one and the same. So if we know what employee group and we know that the person's part-time, we'd be able to then say, did you meet this test or not? Same test right across the board. I'll ask you now, do those letters mean anything to you? Anybody wants to take a shot at guessing or to inform the rest of the audience what the what those letters stand for? Great. Give yourself a chocolate. So when we look at additional voluntary contributions, again, these are all concepts now that you would say, regardless of which pension plan you're participating in, all of them have this concept of an additional voluntary contribution. Why do we have this? Well, individuals may want to save more towards their retirement. So it's an opportunity for people to put more money aside than what the required contributions would be under a specific plan. Now, we know that they don't attract additional contributions from the university. But can anyone now take a guess? Why would someone else, someone want to make an additional voluntary contribution over and above the explanation that I gave? Any other reasons that someone may want to make additional? Excellent. Good. They're all very good answers. Anybody that gave an answer, you get a chocolate.
He's right on board with that idea.
We'll have everybody shouting out answers by the end of the presentation, I hope. Another concept that's going to come out is to say, how does a person decide? Because once a person is inside a pension plan, the next decision they make is to say, they have to choose investments. If you remember, when the first icon, the piggy bank, the defined contribution pension plan. Members have to make investment decisions. So for this exercise, I'm going to ask you all now to think back at the time that you joined the pension plan for the very first time. I believe most of you, if not all of you, joined the pension plan at some point. If some of you are still not eligible to join a pension plan, think back at the first time that you made an investment. You can just visualize, go back to that time period. You're given a bunch of forms, or you've gone online. Someone was asking you to say, pick from a series of investment options. How many of you would have felt a little bit lost? Okay. Confused. How many of you felt confident? Nobody?
Okay. Confident?
Now you do? Okay. Well, the next exercise that we're going to do, and we're going to do it together, hopefully it'll help you build some confidence. And this is more for yourself than for anything. It's really a question of trying to understand what it is to make an investment selection. And it isn't as complicated as you might have thought. At the beginning of the presentation, Karen handed out one of these sheets of paper. I'm going to ask you all now to take it out. And we're going to actually go through this exercise together. But you're all going to answer for yourself individually. What this is an investor profile questionnaire. And by going through this process, by the end of having completed this questionnaire, you will have the answer for yourself to say, how should you be investing? We'll go through some of the questions. There's some demographic information. How old are you? If we're looking in the context of the McGill University pension plan, we'd say, when will you be needing this money? So it'll be when I retire. So there's a lot of young faces in the audience, so I would suspect a lot of them will be in over 20 years. Some of you might be a little bit closer to that date, so you would put in one of the other dates there. Put in your income level. Number four, your current financial situation. Has everybody finished number four so far? Okay, so if you move on to the next one. And you can see that there's no right or wrong answers in any of this, so you don't need to look over and see what your neighbor is doing. This is really, what do you feel? And what's your understanding and approach? For those of you that are already on number seven, it's really intended to give you a sense of what's your risk tolerance. How would you feel if you're investing and suddenly it's worth less than what you started off with? For number eight, there's some of you that might be very investment savvy. Some of you may only have a very limited or no knowledge of investments in general. Just put down the one that you think best fits your own situation. Keeping in mind, there is no right or wrong answer in any of this. Has everybody had a chance to complete all of the questions, or do you want a couple more seconds? Okay. If you've all completed the questions, tally up the numbers. Each one of the answers that you gave has a number of points associated with it. They're not chocolates. I'd run out of chocolates real quick if we'd have to. But if you can tally up how many points that you got from the various questions that you answered, and we can see that those numbers that you're going to get, and if you felt that you didn't have enough of a chance to complete it properly here today, when you have a moment, quiet moment to yourself, you can go back and revisit the exercise and redo it and complete the answers. Come up with a score, and each one of those scores is going to correspond to a different investor profile. So in the arena of investments, this is the very first step, whether you're dealing with an investment advisor, a financial planner, they all go through a process similar to this. Now, the form that we are using here today is the form that's used by Industrial Alliance in the case of the simplified pension plan. But every financial institution has their own. Some of them have more questions. Some of them have less questions. But they're all intended to do pretty much the same thing, which is to give you a sense of who you are as an investor. So once you've got the points, you can see that for those that have between 8 and 24 points, Industrial Alliance would suggest that you're a conservative investor. As a conservative investor, then there's an allocation. They would suggest that about 80% of your financial holdings be invested in income funds. Foreign funds, 10%, Canadian equity funds, 10%. So really what they're saying is 80% bonds, 20% stocks. So now if you were part of the McGill University pension plan, there's only 5 investment options there, and the investment options are actually the same name as the asset class. We have an equity pool, we have a fixed income pool. If I knew that I scored between 8 and 24 and I'm a conservative investor, I know that I should be putting 80% in equities, 80% in bonds, the reverse. Just looking to see if you're paying attention. And 20% in equities. It's no more complicated than that. So what may have seemed like a very scary exercise, the confusion, and so on, how long has it taken us to get to this point? Probably 5 minutes, 6 minutes. And you've already got a lot more clarity than you've ever had before. And you can keep on going down the list. Moderate investors, as we start seeing moderate investors, the percentage that's being attributed to bonds starts going down. The percentage being allocated to equity starts going up. And if you were to keep on going on to the other extreme end of the grid, you would end up, for those of you that scored between 97 and 120 points, if I can just ask, did anybody score around that number of points in this group? Nobody? A lot of young faces here. Okay. Well, this will be an aggressive growth. So this is really appropriate for someone who's got many, many years ahead of them, that they're able to weather the storms, and they're looking for the maximum amount of capital appreciation. And we can see here that Canadian equities plus foreign equities is 80%. So it's the reverse of what we saw on the very conservative investor profile. So whether you're looking at the McGill University pension plan, or if you've ever opened up a registered retirement savings plan, you never were quite sure. What did I choose? What investments do I have? How many of you remember which fund that you chose under the McGill University pension plan? You know which investment option that you elected when you first joined? Nobody remembers? One? A couple of you? Okay. Hopefully I've given you the incentive to go back, take a look at what you actually did back then, and see if it matches up with the form that you've completed here today. Whenever I give information sessions, it's interesting, most of the audience are not as young as you would be. It's mostly people at the tail end of their career. A lot of them don't remember what they chose. A lot of them, it's been years that they haven't looked at their investment allocation. But I encourage them to do the very same exercise that you've just done here today. Do an investor profile questionnaire. The answers are all there. Okay. We'll now jump right ahead into the various programs that we have here at McGill. We have the first pension plan we'll talk about, which is the Service Employees Union Pension Plan. When we look at this, what type of a pension is it? Remember, there were only 2 different types that we talked about. We had the piggy bank and the mathematical formula. Anybody remember what the piggy bank, what that plan type is? Okay, great. SEU would be a defined contribution pension plan. I'll add an extra layer of information for you. It's a non-contributory pension plan. And when we look at non-contributory, that means from the member's point of view, the member doesn't need to put any money. The university will make the required contribution. But if you remember the other slide, can I as a member put in additional monies into the pension plan? And what do we call those additional contributions? Excellent. Give yourselves a chocolate. We look at eligibility. Who's going to participate in this pension plan? So remember, we look back, which employee group? So we know that you need to be part of a full-time employee, a member of Local 800. In addition to that, there's a bunch of codes there, because not all of this group participates necessarily in this pension plan. So for those of you, and I hope all of you know what those codes are, well, those ones there are the ones that participate in this pension plan. I know very often when people in the group, they often talk about which color, and then they're usually looking at the collective agreement, and the collective agreement refers to an employee group, and so on and so forth. But if you don't remember, or you've never seen the collective, or the color of the collective agreement, then those codes is what guides you to say who's going to be participating in this plan. When we look at the parameters of that plan, how much does the university contribute? 7.74%. I'll introduce a new concept now. How much can I put into the pension plan? The same rule that applies right across the board. Under the Income Tax Act of Canada for the calendar year 2012, combined contributions between the employee and the university cannot exceed $23,820. That rule applies to every single pension plan, not only here at McGill, right across Canada. Start looking at the voluntary contributions. For some reason, under this plan, they limit it to 5%. Give you another pop-up quiz. How many of you know how many members are in this pension plan? Outside of Tammy.
Outside of Tammy.
Anybody else want to take a guess? D?
C.
C? Okay. How many guessed C? Put your hands up.
I did.
Okay, everybody's going to change their answer now.
Okay, you can pass the basket over to everybody who guessed number C. C is the right answer. And just for your own personal information, you don't need to remember any of this. There won't be any more quizzes about when did this pension plan start. But for those of you that are interested, you're a little bit of a history buff. 1977. How many assets are in this plan? Just under $17 million. We've got actually 374 active and 56 inactive. It's actually administered by Sun Life. Now, we did include one other number at the bottom. Still don't know what it is, but it's a contract number. Apparently, if ever we need to get a hold of Sun Life, if we use those contract numbers, they know that it's the McGill pension plan for the Service Employee Union. Whenever there's a call coming in, someone's asking questions about the Service Employees Union pension plan or someone that's eligible for participation, what are the expectations? Someone's going to call HR. We will talk about, are you eligible? Which plan do you join? But that's the extent of what we discuss with the members. When it comes to, I need forms, I'm retiring, what do? I want to change a beneficiary. I want to change my investment allocation. We direct the members to say, contact Sun Life. Sun Life is actually doing all this work. So they're your counterparts. They're doing the exact same things that you would be doing under the other plans. So we need to just direct individuals to the right place. I didn't put ABCs down. I knew there would be one that I would miss there. So you get a chocolate just for that.
ABCs, what happens currently is we have a form that gets filled out because we need that form for payroll purposes to get it set up. And then that form is communicated to someone.
Perfect.
But new enrollments, it's on the form.
Okay.
Who sets up the part-time SUs? Because those don't get set up automatically.
Yeah. It was me. Karen is doing it temporarily, but I don't know what's happening.
We're changing the process, and we will streamline it.
But I thought they're not allowed to contribute to the ABC.
They are.
They
we did say
5%.
That there was the prior slide 5%.
But before that, there was a slide.
There was a slide that.
No. There was a slide. You said they only in the defined benefit.
Okay. There's. I think I understand where the question comes in. There's a difference between required contributions versus voluntary contributions. Under this program, the employees are not required to make any contributions. That doesn't mean that if they choose to do it on a voluntary basis, that they cannot do so. So that's where the difference comes in. Under the other pension plans, members have requirements to make contributions. This pension plan, members are not required to make contributions.
But they could.
Up to 5%. The next plan we'll talk about, the simplified pension plan. And when we look at simplified pension plan, do you think it's the piggy bank or the mathematical formula? It's a defined contribution plan. And we know under that program, the member as well as the university contributions are exactly the same as they are under the McGill University Pension Plan. The two are mirror images of each other in terms of the rate of contributions. Where they do differ is which employee group participates in this program versus which employee group participates in the McGill University Pension Plan. When we look at the employee groups, we're looking really at temporary employees, or what we commonly refer to as casuals, as well as course lecturers. So if you remember all of those long lists of different positions that are available at McGill, now you start seeing where did they fit in. So if you're having a conversation and there's a course lecturer that says, I'd like to join the pension plan, knowing that the person's a course lecturer, you can make the connection to say, well, this goes to the simplified pension plan, not to the SCU pension plan, not to the McGill University pension plan. We start looking again at the letters. Hopefully they mean something to you guys. And the same sort of rules comes in for part-timers. I could be a part-time casual employee. Do I look at this year's income or do I look at last year's income? So we can see now there's one additional thing, because we may have, in certain instances, we've tied in the optional benefits package simply to say we do at times have individuals who are not course lecturers that may be invited to the McGill plan as a part-timer. Sometimes it would be the same classification, same employee might be invited to this plan. We made an additional sort of administrative rule that says, well, if I'm inviting you to the optional benefits package, I'll invite you to the McGill plan. If I'm not inviting you to the optional benefits package, then I'll invite you to the simplified pension plan. That's the only distinction that comes in. What's most important is that members get invited to participate when they're eligible. And whether they're in the simplified pension plan or the McGill University pension plan, that's less important than to make sure that they get invited. You know, all of us would want to say that when we're eligible, that we have the opportunity to start putting money aside for our retirement, that we take advantage of those opportunities when they do arise. When we look at the contribution rates, in 2012, under the McGill University Pension Plan, and we know that this plan here mimics the McGill University Pension Plan exactly. So we have three different rates of contribution depending on your age. If you're under age 40, you contribute 5%, but if you've ever checked your pay stub, you would have noticed that it's not exactly 5%, because there's a second rule. We have a two-tiered contribution rate. We go back to that famous number that I gave before. Anybody remembers what the Quebec Pension Plan earnings limit was for 2012? Excellent. So we can see that on the amounts up to $50,100, the person actually puts in not the full 5%, but 5% less 1.8. So they put 3.2%. Individual that's earning $100,000, as an example, would say, On the first 50,000, they put 3.2%. On the next 50,000, they contribute a full 5%. So that's why sometimes we have these questions, members will call up and say, hey, how come I didn't put 5% of my income into the pension plan? Well, explanation's right there. We have a two-tier contribution rate. Commencing 2013, the rate of contribution is going to increase. We know that for those under age 40, no changes will take place as far as the rate of contributions are concerned. For those age 40 to 49, 2% more. But the same sort of thing. It'll be 7% less 1.8. Or if you're age 50 and above, you'll be required to put 8% with the same deduction of 1.8%. And you can see that for the McGill, the university side of things, they haven't changed anything from 2013 to 2012. It'll be the exact same thing. It's one of the rare pension plans that's out there that you can say the older you get, the more the university contributes on your behalf. So when I turned 50, I was pretty happy. I had a big smile on my face. And hopefully, you too. So when you turn 50, you'll have something to celebrate instead of being sad about that. Again, just some additional information. For those of you that were around, you would have remembered that it wasn't that long ago when the simplified pension plan was first put in, 2002. We do have assets of about almost $4 million, 177 active members being administered there. Who do you think administers the simplified pension plan?
Karen Rager. Wrong.
Take a chocolate away, anybody that said Karen. Just think back at the prior slide. Okay, so for those that were paying attention, you can grab another chocolate. It is Industrial Alliance. So when we look again, same sort of question, who do we deal with in terms of when one of these employee groups who's eligible to participate in the simplified pension plan, you guys, you look only at enrollment, eligibility, that's it. When it comes to which investment options do I want? Well, you can suggest to the person, complete an investor profile questionnaire, you've gone through it, but really, that's what Industrial Alliance would do. There's a specified number there. Your counterparts there would be the ones handling all of those type of questions. You may get calls. I'm part of the simplified pension plan. I'm retiring. I'm terminating. What do I do? Your answer should be call the 1-800 number. The individuals there that will guide them through the process. The next one, the one that you've all been waiting for. The McGill University Pension Plan. Now, just when you thought we had it all clear, there's defined contribution, defined benefit plans. Now we're going to try and confuse you a little bit. There is another plan type, which we call a hybrid pension plan. And hybrid pension plan, it's nothing more complicated than saying, well, it's part defined contribution, part defined benefit. So if we know what a defined benefit plan is and we know what a defined contribution pension plan is, then we know what a hybrid plan is. Now, there aren't two hybrid plans which are identical and exactly the same. These are very rare. So for McGill to have one of these plans, they're the exception rather than the rule. So the way we administer a hybrid plan at McGill is something unique. Talk about eligibility. And we know that within the McGill University Pension Plan, we have a vast array of different employee groups who are eligible to participate. There's academics. We have admin and support staff. We also have some of the service employees union group is part of the same program. When we look at full-time individuals within those employee groups, you're not required to join right away. You can wait for the first 5 years and say, take a pass. I don't have any good explanations to say why would a person not join right away. In the information sessions that I do give on a monthly basis, very often I meet individuals that are at the tail end of their career, and they come back and they say, well, when I first started working, I didn't join the plan for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. They all ask me the same question. Can I make up for those lost contributions? Can I go back and take advantage of that? And I'm actually sad to tell them, sorry, you can't. Because it's only later on that they realize how much they really gave up. So if you're one of those that's sitting on the fence and you haven't joined one of the plans and you're eligible to join, I'd suggest come to an information session. Really give this some thought, because it's something that more than likely you'll find yourself at the tail end of your career regretting that decision once you really understand the importance of planning and setting aside monies for your retirement. We know that after 5 years, it's mandatory participation. For the part-timers, it's never mandatory. They join if they want to join. Anybody that understands the value of these programs would join at the very first opportunity possible. Another pop quiz, another chance to get some chocolate. How much money do you think is currently being held in the McGill University Pension Plan? Karen, you're not allowed to answer.
B.
B?
B, really?
Wow. I'd say
D.
D?
I know at one point.
How many said D?
No, A.
Okay. Pass the chocolate box around. D is the right answer. It's actually about $1.2 billion that's being held in the pension plan right now, or as at year end, December 31st, 2011. So it's quite a bit of money. It's actually one of the largest defined contribution type pension plans across Canada. So you're able to participate in that type of an arrangement and take advantage of that. When we look at some of the other stats for the historians in the group, you can see that the plan started in 1972, so it's been around for quite some time. There was a predecessor pension plan even prior to 1972, but we can say in the shape and form, this hybrid plan came into play in 1972, well before anybody else ever even thought about hybrid pension plans. Many other universities copied the McGill University plan and its design. They found it to be a very good plan, and it continues to be a very good plan. We look at the number of members, you can see a huge amount relative to the other pension plans.
What do you mean by inactive? Is it people that haven't joined, or is it people that...
No. It's when we look at active versus inactive, the terminology is one that's used in pension vocabulary. When we look at an active employee, when you think of active, what do you usually think of in a pension plan? Are you putting in money? Are you contributing? So in order to contribute, you have to have income. You have to have salary and so on. So those would be the active employees. Inactive employees would be, I stopped working at McGill, but I didn't pull the money out. So I'm not making contributions, but I have my money there. Or I'm a retiree. I bought an annuity from the pension plan 20 years ago. I'm not making new contributions. I'm actually getting paid. So they would be considered inactive. So just additional vocabulary. Don't worry, it won't be on the pop quiz. But it's a very good question. So I'd say you deserve a chocolate just for that. Good question. In actual fact, I'll even share one additional piece of trivia for you. It's about 80% of the employees that are eligible for the McGill University Pension Plan join right away. It's only about 20% that don't take advantage immediately. Of that 20% that don't join right away, about 80% of them actually join after the first year. So for most people, it takes them, or for that 20% group, most of them, within a year, they realize the advantage of participating and then actually join. So it still means, in the end, it's 20% of 20%, so there's still 4% of our eligible population which wait 2, 3, 4, or 5 years before joining. It's still too much.
Just a question, because it changed in 2009 to the defined contribution, so would you still call it a hybrid plan for those who joined after 2009, or is it just a defined contribution?
Excellent observation. I'd say for those that joined in 2009, it's a pure defined contribution pension plan. For those that were there prior, then it is a hybrid arrangement. I didn't catch that on my slide, so you deserve a chocolate or two for that one. So yeah, the next time this presentation will be given, I'll make the slides that much better based on all this feedback that you're giving me today. And we can see the slide. You've seen it before. It's the contribution rate, but it's the exact same one as what we're using under the simplified pension plan. Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
If you go back to that other slide.
This one?
As of 2013, the employees will also be contributing 7%?
Depends on your age. Only the ones between age 40 and 49, they're putting in a little bit more money into the pension plan.
Is this new? It's going to start as
January 1, 2013. Anybody who was part of the McGill University pension plan had received a notification. There was quite a bit of a notification that was going out. Many information sessions were held. I had the privilege, opportunity to speak with many, many hundreds of employees to explain all of the changes that were going on under the McGill University pension plan. It's something that we can, is everybody aware, or is it no one is familiar with what's going on? Sorry?
I didn't know 7%. I don't
think anybody. Okay. The notice of amendment said a range.
Okay.
It has since been determined by the board based on the pension administration committee that it will be the 2 and the 3.
Good point.
If you want to see the presentation that John gave, we do have, it was videotaped when it was given to the SCU group. I can give you, it's supposed to go out to everybody, but they haven't done that yet, but I can send you guys the link if you want to watch a presentation on all the changes and why the changes, because that was one of the first ones that we videotaped.
Okay. So let me confirm, it's not the fact that the contribution rates are going up, it's 7 and 8, not the fact that contributions are going up. Was everybody aware that contribution rates were going up?
Yes. Yeah, but we weren't aware of
the percentage.
That was still in.
Okay. Then you're perfectly correct. We haven't published this yet. We will be doing so in the very near future.
It will be in the annual report. It is indicated in the annual report that will probably come out next week.
And there will be more communications going out to the community well in advance of January 1 to notify them that it's exactly 7% for this age group and 8% for the other. So my apologies for that. If you weren't aware that the rates were going up, that I think not knowing the exact percentage is one thing. But the fact that the rates were going up has been widely distributed, and virtually every group has been informed of that. Go back into, whenever we get like questions, what are some of the tools that are available to us to help guide individuals to get better informed, to start answering some of their own questions? And what I wanted to do is just do a quick run through as to all of the information that's available online to members of the McGill University Pension Plan, the Simplified Pension Plan, the Service Employees Union Pension Plan, so that you can see that at times, if individuals are aware of all the information that's available to them, very often they'll be able to answer most of their own questions. And if they're not able to answer their own questions, if you're aware where the information resides, it'll be much easier for you to guide individuals through in the process. And I'll give you just a very, very high-level overview. For Sun Life, they have a really fabulous website available to them. They can get their plan balance. And remember, Sun Life is which plan? Great. So with Sun Life's website, they're able to go in and do financial planning. They could tell them, well, if I make an additional voluntary contribution of 2%, what's it worth to me? How much is this additional $50 a pay that I'm going to be putting in going to be worth 20 years from now? They have all of those modeling tools available to them. They can look at their statement at any time, so they don't have to wait till the physical statement comes out and so on. So lots of information. They have the investor profile questionnaire, a different version of this available online, so they can go in and complete that, and then they don't have to add up the numbers themselves. The system will actually add up the numbers for them and so on. A lot of these organizations now, what they're doing is they're saying, if you complete an investor profile questionnaire, and if as an example, I was rated as being a conservative investor, and all of a sudden I'm starting to put all my money in equity funds, do you see a problem with that? Okay. Look at the pie chart. The conservative profile would suggest 20% stocks, 80% bonds. Well, if the member starts doing the reverse, the system would flag it to them and say, you know, put up a red flag and tell them, your profile doesn't match up with what you're doing. And it cautions them on these things. So just pointing people in the right direction, lots and lots of information available to them there.
And thus, RBC, you have to do it every year. If you have investments, you're explanatory that you do it every year. I think if it's online.
Yeah. RBC, that would be for your registered retirement savings plan. There's a different set of legislation. It's called Know Your Client Rules. That means a financial institution cannot sell you a financial product without knowing who you are. Yet, we all here made investment decisions without really understanding who we are. That's why when we look at this and say, how do we go about making investment decisions if the law forces a salesperson to say they need to know who you are, you need to know who you are before you make an investment decision. So it's the mandatory first step. Even though it's not mandatory by law, but it's the logical first step in trying to decide how do we need to invest our holdings. Industrial Alliance, same sort of thing. Tons and tons of information there. They have this same questionnaire available online. They match it up. They verify. Does your investment asset mix match up with what your profile suggests that you should be doing, et cetera, et cetera. So lots and lots of information there, too. You're not expected to become experts on Industrial Alliance's website and Sun Life's website. That isn't the case. What the expectation is more that you at least know that they exist and point people there. If they're asking questions about, you know, what investment options are available in the Simplified Pension Plan, easy answer. Go online. Industrial Alliance has all the information available to you. You don't need to memorize or remember all of the funds that they're offering. Just need to point them in the right direction. McGill University Pension Plan. We have, this is still the image of the historical pension site. So if it doesn't look familiar, there's two sites. There's the HR site, and then there's this one here. But they basically say the same thing. So regardless which one you're looking at, and we can see there's also lots and lots of information. Unfortunately, we don't have the resources of Sun Life and Industrial Alliance. We don't have the investor profile questionnaires. So we don't have, you know, all of the modeling tools. But we do have quite a bit of information. For those of you that have never gone on to the pensions website, you'd be pleased to learn. You can find out what your account balance is each and every month. So for those of you that are part of the defined contribution plan, you can actually get an updated information every single month. We also have the employee booklets. Did you even know that we have an actual employee booklet which describes all the rules and regulations, how the pension plans operate? When was the last time that any of you picked it up and had an opportunity to look at it? Besides Karen. So if you haven't, you can see that there's tons of information there. We do keep it up to date. It is online, relatively up to date. So it's another great source of information. So if we get those typical questions that, you know, we often get, well, I'm not quite sure, how does this work? You know, am I eligible? Am I not eligible? There's lots and lots of information out there that a member can make reference to. And I do encourage you all to go online.
For benefit enrollment for new hires, it's extremely overwhelming for someone to go in and choose their pension, and they cannot continue unless they choose their pension. And to ask them to go on here to do that, it's kind of hard. Is there a way that we can kind of have something like this to put on the benefit enrollment so that they could maybe go in, answer these questions, so that they kind of get an idea of what they want so that they can go and choose? Because you're allowed to change after 3 months, but you can't continue until you can't be paid until you do your benefits. And pension is a part of that, so that they just basically put whatever they want, and they just go eeny, meeny, miny, moe, put the information in, and then in 3 months change it. So is there a way that it can make it easier for them to?
It is something that we're going to be looking at, because unfortunately we don't have our own investor profile questionnaire that's proprietary to McGill.
But this would be like if we take away Industrial Alliance.
And we
take away that little card.
If it was that easy,
but if
we
do that,
like
the how old are you? When you plan on needing money? These questions would be ideal.
What we can do to facilitate the exercise, and the reason why I wanted very much to have you go through this exercise here today is because we can do that very thing, is to say, I can encourage a person to say, go on to the web, go on to your favorite financial institution. Every single financial institution has something similar to this. By completing this exercise, they're able to do the investment selection. So unfortunately, we don't have that nice tie-in that says we have a proprietary questionnaire with a nice form that you can complete, and at the end it gives you the answers. But we can say, what's the next best thing? Complete anyone from any financial institution that has pie charts at the end that gives them investment selection recommendations. And from that, they can just relate to the same funds under the McGill University Pension Plan. So it's the roundabout way of getting to the same point as you're suggesting. We will be working into the future to say, how do we modify that, so that it's all done in a one single shot. Unfortunately, McGill is not a financial institution, so to say, we can't just go take somebody else's form and say, here it is, we'll change, we'll put our logo on it. There's copyright infringement rules that would prevent us from doing that, but but it doesn't stop a person from going in and doing it themselves and coming away with the answers. So that's why I thought it would be important to have you go through the exercise, because you can see it's not rocket science. It's relatively straightforward once you've done it. So if you've ever wanted to see...
We don't offer foreign fund. So like this would work. Someone would say, okay, well, it says I should have 30% foreign.
It does work.
Five investment options. There isn't one that's called foreign.
It's just because when they call, they're always... Well, I don't understand. I need to get paid. I want to do my enrollment. I can't continue. I need to do my pension. What am I supposed to do? Where am I supposed to put it? And there's only so much knowledge we know.
Session, you know,
it's a month later. You get the next session, which is after.
Because I've been offering, I've been advising people, employees, saying there's a general information session, but their start date is February 1st, and now the next one's April. So they want to get paid, and they can't. So anyway, it's just... Okay.
What I would suggest is, regardless of which profile questionnaire that they're completing, when you're looking at, you really make the distinction between equities and bonds. Now, if most of you know what that is, great. And you would say whether it be foreign equity, Canadian equity, U.S. equity. Under the McGill University Pension Plan, equity is equity. So that's what you look at. So that's the way you would make that conversion in terms of applying even this form here to the McGill plan. Yes, you can do it. Just distinguish between equity and bonds. For those of you that say, what's an equity? What's a bond? We're not going to cover that today, but you are invited to come and attend any one of the general information sessions. I know I've seen many of you attending sessions of the past. I'm not sure that I've seen every single one of you. So if you do have the time and you want to like come in and up your understanding of investments, bring it to the next layer, attend an information session. It'll be my pleasure to walk you through, as well as everybody else that's in the room, because there is a methodology that when you follow the methodology, it takes away a lot of that feeling of loss, uncertainty, even fear, and it puts a lot more confidence in you when you're making these type of decisions. In trying to get plan balance information, you will need to get two pieces of information. One is your employee ID. The other is going to be a McGill pension PIN number. So it's not the Minerva PIN number. It's a number that's unique to the pension plan. If the person doesn't remember what their pension PIN number is, you just guide them. There's a little icon at the bottom of the page that they click on that, and it spits out an email to them with their password, and then they're ready to go. So there's lots and lots of tools there. So the purpose of today is not necessarily to go through every single screen and every tool that's there, but to sort of encourage you to say, when you have a moment sometimes, look at it from your own point of view. For those of you that are participating in the McGill University Pension Plan, if you've never gone online to check and see your balance, give it a try. Because you've got to think about it, like, our members are doing the exact same thing. If you've done it for yourself, it's a lot easier to coach someone and guide them through the process than to say, oh, I'm following this book and I'm just reading out to you what's going on. When you live the experience, it makes it a lot easier for you to remember. It makes it a lot easier for you to guide someone else along. Because every time the member calls up, they're feeling the same things. They're feeling that confusion, that fear, that uncertainty. So, you know, your energy translates back. The more confidence you have, the more opportunities you've had to practice, to go through and apply some of these principles to yourself, the better equipped you're going to be to deal with the others. When we look at brochures, we mentioned that. We've got lots of printed information there. One of the extremely interesting things that we have under the hybrid plan, to give you an example, we have in the brochure, very often we ask ourselves, how does this hybrid arrangement work? What's this defined benefit? What's this defined contribution? There's actually a numerical example within that brochure there that walks a person through, and it says, you know, this is how much you had accumulated under the defined contribution segment. This is what the defined benefit would be. And it goes through the actual mathematical calculations. And I know the first day that I worked here at McGill, I opened up that booklet and I looked through that explanation and I understood. And it made it a lot easier. But had I not looked at that brochure, I would have been just as confused as most people are when it comes to how does that interaction between the defined benefit and defined contribution operate. So it's not for today's session. We're not going to go through that. We'll save that for a different presentation. It's more to make you aware of all of the tools that are available to you to get a little bit more familiar so that when those questions do come up, you may not remember what page, but you'll remember, hopefully, oh, there's a booklet out there that explains all of this. I can direct the member to go review that material. When we ask individuals about the additional voluntary contributions, well, unfortunately, we only have the online functionality for the McGill University Pension Plan. The other ones, it's all on paper form. However, for the McGill University Pension Plans, and we know the majority of the membership, if you remember, how many members were in the McGill plan, active members?
5,000.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. So we can say at least 5,000 some odd people can go in and make additional voluntary contributions, and they do it through Minerva. And we can see the functionality. They'll go in, they can plug in their ID and so on, and the system will calculate for them to say how much they're able to make as additional voluntary contributions. I'll ask you one question. I'll see who's really paying attention. What is the maximum contribution limit for a pension plan in the year 2012? 2,300? 23,813. Yes. That's a chocolate for sure. Oh, you had the page open at the right spot? See, it pays to take notes and write some numbers down. Good for you. So fantastic. So remember, a person could say between what they were required to put in, what the university is required to put in, and 18% of their income. So if I'm earning $100,000, we'll use a nice even number, 18% of $100,000 is $18,000. So we say $18,000 is less than $23,820. So then we use $18,000. If I'm earning $300,000, 18% of $300,000 is I'm going to get that one wrong. $54,000. So $54,000 is above $23,000. So then we use the $23,000 becomes our next target point. So if you remember those numbers, you don't have to memorize it. Just remember that there's an upper limit. You'll be able to go back to your notes. At the end of the presentation, we'll give you all the slides that we used here today, so you'll have a reference point. And those numbers, you'll see quickly, you'll be able to spit them out, and it won't be so confusing any longer. When it comes to the actual allocation, individuals can make different investment allocations for future contributions versus what they already have in their account. I don't know why it was done that way, because normally when we invest, we take a look at all of our investments. And I can give you some, this is more for you. I'm not, this is not for coaching or giving advice. We don't give advice over the phone, especially when it comes to investments, but for your own information. When you look at investments, you take a look at the big picture. You don't just look at what you're doing under the McGill University Pension Plan. What have you done? How have you invested under your Registered Retirement Savings Plan? If I've got, you know, $50,000 of Canada savings bonds tucked away in my mattress, I would want to know that when I'm making investment decisions. Because remember, the process that we use says, go take a look at what your investor profile is, and then it comes back with an asset mix recommendation. But that asset mix recommendation is for everything that you have. So if I've got that $50,000 of Canada savings bonds tucked away in the mattress, I need to know that when I'm making other investment decisions, because I would say overall, if I'm a conservative investor, anybody remember how much should I be putting in equities versus fixed income? Excellent. See, then you would say, now I know where, how close to that number am I? But you look at the big picture. So that's more for yourselves when you're looking at these sort of things. Okay? Someone's leaving. They're retiring. You're the lucky individual that gets to answer the phone. What do you do?
Tammy.
I'm going to challenge all of you to say, if you can just follow three simple steps. You think you can manage three simple steps? So the answer is not, step one, transfer the call to Tammy. That isn't step one.
Okay. Semi-kidding.
Let's look at it. Step number one. We prepare generic settlement packages for everybody. We go to the effort of saying, anytime we get a notice of termination or a notice of status change, there's a whole thick package of information that goes out. That whole package of information is intended to inform an individual as to the steps they need to be following, the process that's involved in transitioning from being an active employee to being outside of the pension plan. All of the decisions, whether it's the person that's retiring and now that they want to move into a retirement mode, or if I'm an employee that I quit and I want to go work somewhere else, well, how do I transition from my McGill position to somewhere else? What do I do with my pension plan holdings? Tons and tons of information in that package. I don't expect you at this phase to be able to say, I memorized that package, I can recite it, I can tell you what's on page one, what's on page three, what's on page five. I challenge you all to say the answer is not transfer the call to Tammy, it's direct the person to the generic package. Person says, I don't have the generic package. When am I going to get it? They're automatically issued once the notice of termination or notice of status change gets forwarded on to Human Resources. But we can say, nothing stops them from going online. They're available online. Go to the main McGill webpage. There's forms, settlement packages right there. They can start taking the time now to start reading and understanding the choices and decisions that they have to make. I'm not expecting you guys to become experts, that you're all going to become financial advisors, but I think you're all able to say, go go look at the package. Lots and lots of information there. Do you all agree that that would be reasonable?
Yes.
Okay. Next one. Another really, really easy one. Every single month, I give at least 2 sessions, and we focus on people leaving. We go through settlement options. We explain what are life income funds, what are annuities. For the people that are really retiring, the session, it's called the retirement information session. We get into what's in the Quebec pension plan, old age security programs, and so on and so forth. How do you prepare for that? In addition to talking about what are the differences between life income funds and annuities. For the individuals that say, I've got all the rest of the information, I really need to understand these annuities better or life income funds better, then there's a settlement option session. So encourage individuals to say, attend a session. So they've got written material. The next thing, they have an opportunity to actually ask questions face to face. It's very, very important. It's the most important decisions that they'll make. The average person that leaves McGill under the McGill University pension plan has about $500,000 accumulated in the pension plan. That's probably the biggest decision of their life. You can imagine when they bought their house the first time, might have been worth a few $100,000. Probably more important than the time and effort that they put into planning for their vacation. Probably more important than planning a wedding or other decisions. It's $500,000 is the average amount that the person leaves with. They need to invest time into understanding the choices that they have. Attend an information session. So just point them in the right direction. Is that another easy one that I can say we can all do that?
Sorry, a lot of times I get calls and I've referred people to that. So I make, well, I need to talk to somebody today. I want to speak with somebody. In that sense, can we make appointments with somebody?
Hold that question. It'll be coming up. Okay. Now, the last point, step number 3 in all of this. I've often been told people, well, they want their money right away. Well, if we know that, there's forms that need to be completed. There's a package that's going to be going out. They need to understand the choices and decisions that they need to make. Once they've gone through that process, the last step in being able to actually get money out of the pension plan is to submit their settlement forms. So we need to be able to tell them, you need to fill out the package that we issue at the onset. It's not there for nothing. We're not there to kill trees. We're there to inform individuals and give them the tools so that once they know what they want to be doing, everything is spelled out. For individuals that want to buy an annuity, there's a form there. There's little boxes that they need to complete. There's a how-to within that kit that explains to them to say, depending on the decisions that you've taken, this is how you fill out the forms. So then you've got this step here, which is to say, inform individuals, nothing happens until they complete the forms and return them to Human Resources. Is that one there also reasonable? I don't hear you guys. Okay. To answer your question now, yes, it will happen that individuals will insist on saying, I want to speak with someone face to face. What I'm going to suggest is we insist as much as possible, attend an information session. Step number 2. Every time someone has to sit down with an individual who has not attended an information session that knows nada, takes at least 2 hours to explain the basics face to face. Every time I give an information session, there's usually 15 to 20 people in that room. If I had to meet with each one of them individually, it would take me 30 to 40 hours. That means I would have to be working for 2 to 3 weeks, back to back, meeting individuals one by one by one to get to the same place that I can get after a 2-hour session. That's why I insist that they go to an information session. There are going to be circumstances where we can say the timing doesn't lend itself. Often, people are lazy. So it's up to us now to say, if every time we're asked the question, we simply say, well, here, this is where you call, book an appointment. Remember the realities. Meeting 15 people is 30 hours of labor. Going to an information session, 2 hours for the same thing. It's on the slide. Give me a second. We're getting there. But they're good when you're asking the questions and the info is coming right after. Once we've done what we can, we've encouraged the person to attend an information session, it's still not going anywhere. They're insisting that they have to speak with someone face to face. You direct them to Phil. That's her number. She's going to triage the call. So you don't transfer a cold call over. Get in contact with Phil. Let them know what's going on. And then Phil will take it from there to book appointments. But we have to work collectively as a team. If we're all saying the same messages, if we all emphasize the importance of attending an information session, it probably makes it a lot better for them. Because if I can describe to you, if you go to an information session, if you would be putting yourself in the place of one of these members, what you get from the information sessions is you get general information. That already answers probably 80 to 90% of the questions that you might have had. By the time you get to speak with someone face to face, you're going to really be dealing with the questions that are most important to you, that are unique to your own individual situation. That makes for a much more interesting and valuable exchange than for someone that has to go back and explain the basics time and time and time again. So we know we have limited resources available to us. How do we make sure the members are getting the best opportunity to inform themselves and to make the right decisions? If we use our time between the general information session, the retirement information session, and the face-to-face meetings, if we stream it properly, we're providing a better level of service to the member than would have otherwise been possible. Okay? You get the call. It's someone from the Service Employees Union. What do we do? Simplified pension plan? Those ones are pretty easy. And they got lots and lots of people there. Their service centers are much larger than the group here, and that's what they do. They take it to the next step and the step beyond that. We're only looking at the very initial step for us. If you can provide that support, that's where you can see the integration between shared services and the center of expertise really working well from the member's point of view. I'm going to ask you now, if you want to maybe just, with the person that's right beside you, everything that we've heard today about the different groups, the different pension plans, how many groups do you think you can identify? How many employee groups who aren't eligible for any pension plans whatsoever? If you could just get together just with the person right beside you and put down a couple of names or try and get as long of a list as you can think of. We'll give you a minute to do that.
Student appointments. on their pay.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Should be taken out. But
is everybody pretty much finished their list? Okay. Let's look at the answers. How many of you had the nil salary? Nobody?
Academics with nil salary.
Okay. Yeah, that's the same thing. Students. Great. Academic trainees. I'm not sure what that one is, but how many of you had it? Good. Affiliate member.
Yeah, that's part of the nil salary. Yeah, it's
all good. See, I didn't know that. So. Teaching assistants. Invigilators, demonstrators. I guess demonstrators are not the people outside on the street today, but other type of demonstrators. Postdocs, grad students. Now, have a quick show of hands. How many had the part-times who didn't earn or just knew that they didn't? Oh, you guys had that one too. Great. Anybody have any of them that aren't on this list? Any extras that I missed? I got them all? I'll give myself a chocolate. I was convinced coming in here that you guys are going to be able to spot a few of them because this is just off as quickly as I could think of. That's a good one. I knew I had to miss a couple. Thank you, Maria, for pointing that one out. We'll expand the list for the next demo that we do on this one here. So you can pass around the basket and help yourself to another piece of chocolate there. You've all done great. Which one? Oh, non-residents. Yeah, that was a new one. We just realized if you're not working and residing in Canada, you can't be part of a Canadian pension plan. So that would be one more that we should add to the list
but
down the road.
Scholars are biggest benefits if they're entitled to them. So they would be entitled to the pension as well. If there's
okay.
Time.
Maybe that's something.
Depends where they're visiting from. Because if they're non-resident, they wouldn't be eligible for pension.
Okay.
How do
if
we
I
know,
can,
though?
All right. If I can just suggest one thing. When we're looking at benefits and pensions, keep in mind, other than in the case of the part-timers where we're saying in certain instances, well, if you've got the benefits, I'll invite you to the McGill University Pension Plan versus the Simplified Pension Plan. There is no correlation between the two.
No, but for full-time, it's mandatory to enroll online. Therefore, pension is part of benefits.
Yeah.
I'm only talking about full-time right now because it's college.
Well, we may have, that's where systems do have their limits, because on the system, it doesn't necessarily recognize, are you a Canadian resident? Are you performing services in Canada? We're addressing that concern. We did have a meeting this week where they're going to be trying to tighten up the rules so that the system doesn't allow these individuals to go in and apply. But keep in mind that there is a big separation between benefits and pension. The rules are not the same. You may be eligible for benefits, but not eligible for pensions, and vice versa is also true. It could very well be that if you met the earnings threshold, that you're eligible for pension plan participation, but that you're under the $25,000 limit and you're not eligible for benefits.
Now, because we're on the subject, I'm really confused about the whole part-time if you're on the benefit package, because I know we're supposed to be treated separately now. But how are we supposed to, like, are we supposed to take it completely off of when we, because I'm still doing, like, offering benefits when employees come in part-time, they do the benefit package. Are we supposed to completely remove pensions altogether now because they're not, because as per what it says there, you have to meet a certain amount of hours as a part-timer for all. So these individuals who are part-time have not worked at McGill. They're brand new hires. So should they, as per that, they shouldn't even be entitled to a pension until year, but they're still being offered.
They
pension.
Should not be.
Because I also have one aside waiting to find out when I'm supposed to put
that person on.
Is it a lot clearer to you after having gone through today's session what you need to do? Because you've given me the perfect answer so far.
As if someone who's doing this, but someone who's updating it, no. Because right now a lot of us are updating benefits and pensions, and we still have no idea what we're supposed to be doing because we're not being advised. So, for instance, whoever's doing benefit enrollment is still offering pension to those part-timers, but now based on that, we're not supposed to because they're supposed to be working 700 hours, which we were not told. So we don't know, are we offering benefits and pension, or is pension completely taken out of the equation and we're not offering pension when we're doing the benefit enrollment for part-timers? Or, I mean, and I have some aside that I haven't even, that I'm still waiting for the answer.
But if I can ask a question, following today's presentation, seems to be that you're clear what needs to be done. Is anybody else in this room doing the same sort of task that is not clear what they should be doing?
So basically, it should be up to the individual who's doing the enrollment to verify, or, you know, like if we need to.
They should
offer
be completely taken out. Because if you're a brand new employee, you're not entitled. But most benefit enrollments, you are entitled.
Most, but not all. We do have often at McGill individuals that say, I used to work full time and then they come back and do part time work. It does come up on a regular basis.
Or they were earning less
than $25,000
and went over $25,000, so they would have their 700 hours.
Okay.
So you have to look at each one of them.
Is this something we need to address separately? Or
this needs to be addressed to find out what exactly we're supposed to be doing with these cases.
Okay.
Because we have no idea how we're supposed to be updating, if they're supposed to be taken out of benefit enrollment, if we're supposed to be putting them on pension, if what day we're putting people on pension, when they should be offered, who's offering.
Okay. Yeah. We'll look into it. Maybe we can do a training session just on that. Is that something that would make it easier?
It has to be addressed separately, John.
Okay. We can do that. At the beginning, we did mention that there was something else showing up, and we used the acronym SNA, which is Supplemental National Arrangement. How many of you even heard this expression before?
No.
All right. Well, today will be your welcome to the Supplemental National Arrangement, but don't worry, I'm not going to make things very difficult. All I wanted to do today is to make you understand there's something new that's going to be coming up. When we look at the expression national, for those of you that aren't familiar with that expression, it really is a theoretical amount. So we know right away in this program, we're going to be dealing with theoretical contributions. Who's going to be participating in this? It's going to be individuals who are beyond the normal retirement date. We can say, what's the normal retirement date? Under the McGill University Pension Plan, we have a concept of a normal retirement date. Regardless of when you actually retire, the pension plan says, once you turn age 65, the month end in which you turn age 65, that is your normal retirement date. Go ahead.
If they change the normal retirement date, provincial or federally or whatever, to 67, are we going to follow this?
The only talk that's been going out there is for old age security.
Okay.
And this is usually what the governments are doing is they're saying it's very expensive to pay someone at age 65. We want to wait till a much later point so that it costs the government less to pay individuals at a later point. There's nothing in the legislation is suggesting that the normal retirement date is being mandated across Canada to be increased to age 67. The government is dealing with its own problems and its own liabilities. So its answer is, I'll pay everybody a little bit later than I used to pay in the past. That's a very different situation than what we're facing here. So for the time being, and for the foreseeable future, unless there's something that gets announced, the normal retirement date would be the month end in which you turn age 65. So regardless if you're an academic, admin and support staff, you continue to work after age 65, and you were part of the McGill University Pension Plan, and you were in the hybrid arrangement, Now, when we use the hybrid arrangement, that reference, that's also what we refer to as Part A of the pension plan. So if you were confused, you heard that expression, didn't know quite what it was, Part A of the pension plan is the hybrid component of the McGill University pension plan. Part B is strictly the defined contribution. Anybody who is Part A, above age 65, commencing January 1, 2012, will be in this notional arrangement. That means they continue to work after age 65. The pension plan stops. However, this thing will kick in. I won't go any further than that to say in the near future, we'll be having another session where we'll come in and explain a little bit about what this whole arrangement is all about. Okay. I've completed my formal portion of the presentation. I'll be more than happy. I'm not sure how many more minutes we have left. But we can use the time if you've had or have any questions, concerns. Go ahead, Tammy.
I saw on one of your earlier slides, you said either the start date or the first of the month following the enrollment date. Can you just clarify what date we're supposed to use for pension enrollment?
Okay. If we go back, we're going to have to say, which pension plan are we talking about?
MUPP.
Okay. If we're looking at McGill University pension plan, members start what happened in the past, the practice, versus what the plan document says. We've tried to now harmonize the two so that what the plan document says and what we actually do is one and the same thing. The plan document for the McGill University pension plan says you start on the first of the month, which coincides with your hire date or date of enrollment. So that would mean that if I start working at McGill January the 2nd, I would only start the pension plan February the 1st. If I only decide, because remember, we had under the McGill University pension plan, it's optional for the first 5 years. So it doesn't mean that because I got hired that I'm automatically joining the McGill University pension plan. We know that, I had mentioned, 20% of our eligible employees don't join the pension plan right away. So for the people that don't start right away, then you would have to say, it's when did they complete the forms and submit them? It'll be the first day of the month following the receipt of that completed application. If I happen to be hired at McGill and I understand the importance of saving for my retirement and I'm hired on the 1st of January, maybe January is not a good date because I think we're closed on that point, but let's say it's the 1st of June and I'm hired and I go in and I enroll right away, well then I start 1st of June. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Any other burning questions that you've always wanted to know but were afraid to ask? About the pension plan, that is. No.
What's the meaning of Lightroom?
Go ahead.
For us in the service center, are we able to attend the settlement and retirement sessions even though we're not retiring?
Are you a member of the pension plan? Okay. Absolutely. It's... Anybody is allowed to attend. I often get requests from individuals who would like to bring their spouse along with them. So when it's the new hire and you're looking to get that information, I rarely get a request to say, I want to bring my spouse with me. But when you're at the tail end and you're ready to retire, very often you can see the most important decision of a person's life, they'll often want to bring in their spouse. Although if asked by a newly hired employee that wanted to bring in their spouse, I wouldn't say no either. So everybody is welcome. Any? Okay. Let me just recap then. There are no more questions. Just want to make sure. When we get a call, someone says, I'm retiring or terminating, do we call Tammy?
No. Call John.
I should expand that. Don't call Tammy. Don't call John. What's the first step?
Generic settlement package.
Step number two.
Attend the session.
Step number three.
Maybe.
Actually, it'll be step 2A and step number 3 in order to settle.
What if they can attend the session? Okay. They want to meet with somebody.
Oh, well, do we already answered that one? You may not have heard the question, but that was.
I have a question. Why is like when you're first hired, why is benefits tied to pension in terms of completing enrolling benefits and then completing the pension plan information? Why is the pension plan not offered after the person's hired?
If you think about it, we always say that the best thing you can possibly do is to contribute and make the decision to join a pension plan. If I'm not sure, should I put my monies into the balanced account or the equity pool or the fixed income pool? If I procrastinate and it takes me 3 months, 6 months, 9 months to make that decision, I can't go back in time and make up. It's much easier for a person to say, join, even if I take an investment option and I'm not 100% sure that that's the better one for me. We can say, we've already given you a tool now that you can point a person, if you're given the opportunity, you can say, just complete an investor profile questionnaire. It's as simple as that. You'll have clarity. Even if they don't do that, it's more important for them to join, and then after they've joined, to go back and make an investment switch. Than it is to say not join, because if you don't join, you don't get the matching contribution. You don't get to put your money into the pension plan.
But is it normal, like in other companies too, that you have to complete it together with your benefits information before you're being hired, before you can be hired?
In four pension plans, normally you would not be happy if someone turned around and said to you, I'm taking money out of your pay, but I'm not going to tell you. And I'm not going to get your agreement to do so. So before you take money out of a person's pockets, especially when it's not mandatory, if this would have been mandatory, then I can say if one of the conditions of employment is that you join the pension plan and you do it right away, I won't ask you the question. I'll just simply enroll you automatically. When we give choices to members, that means it's up to the person to decide what they want to do for themselves. And you may decide today, no, I don't want to participate in a pension plan. I don't have any good reasons why that would be the case. But someone may decide for themselves that, no, that's not where they want to put their priorities. We can't force or impose those decisions on individuals. Everybody gets to choose for themselves what they think is right. But if they attended an information session, they probably would make the right choice.
But usually the information sessions are after the person's hired.
It's better that they show up better a month late, 2 months late, than to say, I've missed the first 5 years of contributions because I never took the time to go in and inform myself. See, there's written information that a person can go access at any time. Before they even get hired, they're able to go online, understand what the different programs are all about. Person doesn't take the time, doesn't invest in their own career and their own future, they will miss out. We're going to give them tools to say, here you go, the tools are there to help you. But we can't obligate and force a person to enroll if they don't want to. And there's a question here first, and then we'll go there. Go on.
Also, you can stop them because it's optional. So they can stop it if they want to, but they can't go back and put into it. So I think having it in the enrollment kind of benefits them, because if they forget or they just don't like it, just hasn't done it, you can't go back and fix it. But if you enroll, you can always go back and say, okay, no, stop it. So
and you can always make changes.
Good point.
So if you make a choice at enrollment and you're not really super comfortable, then you can go to an info session and then make a change. So as long as they know they can change it, I think that would help too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Was it, I think Tammy was next.
A lot of members call the service center when they have forgotten their pension PIN. And in the past, we used to be able to verbally confirm over the phone by asking a few questions. And we have been told in the last couple of years that we can't do that anymore, that we have to mail them a PIN. And it does take time. Can we not revert to just asking them some personal questions and provide them with the PIN over the phone?
I'm assuming that you're not talking about active employees. Because the active employee
right.
can go online,
no. yes.
click
right.
a button, and get it
yeah.
like within the seconds. Okay. If Karen, would you mind taking note of that? Because I don't have an answer for you
okay.
here, but I'll need to discuss that with
okay.
with shared services and see what makes sense.
Thanks.
Third point.
In reference to making changes to your investment choices, can you do that at any time?
No.
Every 3 months.
Within 3 months?
Every 3 months. And that's online? I guess in
yeah.
general?
Yeah.
Now, I do add one extra caveat, because we did have, in the past, a lot of individuals would be hired. They didn't attend an information session. They're asked to fill out an investment allocation. Had no clue what they were doing. Just filled in a number. They then take the time to attend an information session and realize that may not have been the wisest choice. The system previously would block them from making the switch after the initial decision for 3 months. We've made a request to modify the system to say, the first time that you make a choice, there isn't a 3 month waiting period. Because we realize a lot of individuals don't really understand what they're doing the first time. I don't know, Nunzia, did this get implemented yet, or is it something still on the...
I think it's still on. I'm not sure if it's implemented.
Okay. So now we can see that if it hasn't been implemented, because unfortunately I don't have even a chance to go online and check it to see if it's been implemented or not. If it isn't implemented yet, because they were supposed to say the first time you do it doesn't count. Well, you can go back and redo it within the 3 month period. If that's the case and the system isn't allowing them to do it, just ask the person to fill out a physical form and send it in. Because we don't want to penalize someone by saying, I made a choice, didn't know what I was doing, a month later I know what I'm doing, but I got to wait another 2 months before I can
yeah.
make the right decision. The reason why we wait 3 months is because we don't want to do day trading. In a pension plan, it's not like you're playing the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, oh, I think the stock market's going down tomorrow, so I'm going to get out of stocks and I'm going to start buying all bonds, or vice versa, and so on. Investments in a pension plan are long-term. You're investing for the rest of your career. So you tend not to want to make these rash decisions. So that's why there's always this waiting period, the 3 months. In actual fact, if you were to be, let's say, participating in the Sun Life arrangement, they say you could only make one switch a month. They also add that, say, if you want to make more than one switch a month, they're going to charge you a flat fee plus 2% of the value of the assets that are part of that trade. See, they're putting a very high price against that, not because they want to get your money, because they give the money back to the plan. What they're trying to do is to say it's not a smart move to start being buying and selling and making all sorts of switches all the time. That usually doesn't give you a good rate of return. So if these are the type of topics that are of interest to you, come to the general information session. I go into a lot of description. It doesn't mean that this is going to be, you're going to have to explain this to members. It's good for you to know for yourself. Remember that. Every time you're having these discussions, sometimes it's, we're more afraid of what we don't know than what we know. By being familiar with a lot of concepts, you'll see, over time, your confidence levels will go up. You'll amaze yourself at how much you'll be able to understand and how much you'll be able to explain to others by just simply investing a little bit of time into the process.
Just on a general note, maybe it would be a good idea to inform new hires that these tools are available to them, these information sessions.
I think that's already done to a certain degree, or you're a new hire. What was your experience?
I didn't know, and that's why I fall into that category of just randomly picking, and I think I have a clearer picture now, so I'll let you know if I can make the changes or
if they call, we advise them to do. But if they're doing it online, then
you don't get the chance all the time to meet the people.
The website online enrollment currently has links to the most current profile sheets, which are for each of the funds that are updated 6 weeks after quarter end. So those are generally up there. The one thing I do want to check is there a link to where they can go see about the info sessions? I'm not sure if that's there.
Would you guys promote the information sessions actively?
But I think it's more the departmental level. Like, we should, when they hire someone with their employment contract, they should tell them. They don't tell them. So, I mean, we get the call later. It's usually when they're waiting to be paid or something, they call us.
Okay. Well, maybe we can remind the HR advisors out in the field to do so.
When the PIN letters go out, once they're joined at that point, they do get a link to the website where they can sign up for an info session, as well as an invitation on when the upcoming courses are, as well as the how to navigate the website.
Okay. Are we running? How much time do we have left?
You have for,
10 minutes.
10 minutes? Okay. Take a couple
that,
more.
Hold on. That
there was a gentleman behind you that has a question up for
us. It's more of a comment. I don't personally, I usually handle mailing out the PIN letters. And I'm not 100% faithful, trustful when it comes to internal mail or post mail for that matter. So there will be cases where, there have been cases where some of them never even received their PIN letter, maybe misplaced in the mail, or we had the wrong address provided to us. So I was also wondering, would there be any possibility of that same type of letter being sent to their internal email address as well, just to be safe?
Can you bring that point up? Because these are all of the ideas and suggestions. If we can put them all in the group, and then we can hold a meeting with shared services and see where are some opportunities where we can streamline things or bring some improvements. Your feedback is very important.
I have another comment too about maybe when the benefit enrollment, because new hires, they get an email sent to their personal account, if then we can add maybe a link of certain things maybe for the general info session and things like that. Because that way it's there. And if, let's say, it all depends on what the department. If the department processes the appointment early, then they do have time to go to an information session before their start date. So if they have that in their email offering them benefits, then maybe they could fill know in advance.
Another good suggestion, something we can address. Maria?
Same thing, what Stephanie said. I have the same idea.
Okay. Good idea, Stephanie. So we'll probably have a couple more minutes. If anybody has any lingering questions before we close? If not, whatever chocolates are left over, I say you're welcome to help yourself on the way out. Thank you very much.
Thank you.